Howdy, writers. This special season of the Hashtag AmWriting podcast is sponsored by Author Accelerator. Author Accelerator hand-matches writers with book coaches who have been rigorously trained to provide motivation and inspiration and give writers the support we need to stop making excuses and get the job done. Find out more and get book coach Jenny Nash's week-long Find Your Foundation Writing Challenge at authoraccelerator.com/amwriting. Author Accelerator also trains book coaches to build their own successful coaching businesses. For more on becoming a coach, go to bookcoaches.com. Hello, and welcome to a special edition of the Hashtag AmWriting podcast, the working bookshelf, aka Hashtag AmReading about writing. I am KJ Delantonia, New York Times bestselling author of The Chicken Sisters and How to Be a Happier Parent, and also a former editor at The New York Times.
And I'm Jenny Nash. I'm an author, a book coach, an entrepreneur, and creator of the Book Coach Certification Program at Author Accelerator.
In every episode of this series, Jenny and I will discuss and debate a pair of popular books on writing focusing on a specific topic like structure, creativity, characterization, productivity.
We're going to tell you why these books are our favorites, and then we're going to put them head to head in a debate about which is best in our Fight Me segment. Then we're going to go into a discussion of the topic itself.
The result will be our usual hashtag AmWriting actionable inspirational advice that can help you get your work done, whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started.
And today we're talking about upping your game.
Upping your game, yes.
Upping your game. And the book that, well, I'll let you go first.
And this is going to be a real fight me because Jenny doesn't like my book. So that's going to be fun. So the book I have chosen, which I have on Kindle, is The Bestseller Code, Anatomy of the Blockbuster Novel. I love this book and have read it multiple times and find it enormously entertaining. It is a data-driven book about people who came up with an algorithm that reads, I'm putting that in air quotes, books and predicts whether or not, so it read, I don't know, a bazillion books. Whatever the version of bajillion will provide you with enough data, and developed a way to predict whether or not the book would be a bestseller that, at least according to them, and I have no reason to doubt them, they are Stanford data science, you know, they're serious people, and this is actually kind of a peer-reviewed academic nerdy festival of a book. So now their algorithm can read a book and make an educated guess about whether or not it's going to hit bestsellerdom. And I think, A, that that's super fun, and B, there's a lot we can learn from it if we don't get too caught up in it. So I love it.
That book makes me crazy, which we're going to talk about in a minute. And I picked a book to stand in opposition to The Bestseller Code, which is The Practice by Seth Godin. And Seth Godin, for those of you who don't know, is a marketing guru. He's the guy who came up with the term permission marketing, which means you allow someone to be in your inbox, or you, I'm saying that wrong. You give permission to people for them to come into your inbox. And he is a very business-oriented guy, but I think he's one of the top people that writers should be reading because of his market-focused, practical understanding of the way creative work gets done. And The Practice, the subtitle Shipping Creative Work, is all about exactly what it sounds like, which is the plodding nature of getting work done. Plodding, not P-L-O-T, but P-L-O-D, the plodding nature of getting work done, that super unfun part of just, you've got to do the work. So I put this in opposition to The Bestseller Code.
Seth has been on the podcast twice, actually, which is a fairly rare distinction that Jenny shares, and once was, I'm pretty sure, talking about this book. So we will put a link to that in the show notes. So I can't, it's not like I don't like Seth's book, but I'm still going to defend mine to the death.
Do it.
Fight me. Fight me, Jenny. Why? What is bad about the fun of reading all the nerdiness about what bestsellers have in common, whether they are, you know, the Bridges of Madison County or, you know, Stephen King?
Because.
Or the Da Vinci Code.
The number one biggest danger, giant neon flashing sign problem for the vast majority of writers is that they think they can reverse engineer success. They think there's a way to look at people that have been successful and figure out how, what they did and then do it their own selves to get to that same outcome. And it is so deeply false and untrue, and it causes so much pain and suffering, and it's so wrong that even the mere idea, I mean, I'll take one tiny little thing from the bestseller code about the titles that are nouns. And I, what's hilarious about this conversation, which we're going to dig into in just a minute, is that you, KJ Dell'Antonia, have defied all of the things I am saying. And it makes me so angry because you, just by sitting there with your cute face and your book behind you, are standing in defiance of my argument. And so I'm still.
I also think you can reverse engineer other people's careers. I am all about reverse engineering other people's careers. Here's the thing. I think we're probably talking about two different things in a sense, which is not unexpected. When I say you can reverse engineer somebody's, you can reverse engineer somebody's career. You cannot reverse engineer their success. You can reverse engineer the book. You cannot reverse engineer the book's success. So, you know, we talk often on the podcast about, I want to be Anna Quinlan when I grow up.
Right.
Well, you know, she wrote a nonfiction. She wrote a parenting column. She wrote, I've picked her for the moment because, and then she wrote novels and then she wrote a book of essays. So maybe that's where I'm going. I've picked her for the moment because she matches. But when I was getting started, I picked people that were just a little ahead of me and went, okay, what did they do? Like, what did they break into? How did that happen? So that is, yeah,
And to be fair,
I'm all about the reverse engineering.
To be fair, I am a massive fan of that too. And I do that in my career. And I also urge my writers to do it. One thing I always say is you can steal structure. You can steal somebody else's structure. So in theory, I agree with that idea for sure. But the specific...
It unfortunately doesn't replace doing the work.
That's right. And so when I say the biggest neon flashing sign danger is when people think, so I just see this so often and I can recognize it now.
The Da Vinci Code is easy and dumb and I can do that.
Well, it's like I'm a train on the tracks. I know what the track is. I'm not going to deviate from the track because the track is what's going to get me there. Don't mess with me. I don't want to wobble off of the track. And what they're failing to do is there's a moment of transition. So what you and I were talking about is I want that career or I want that outcome or I want that thing. But there's a moment in which you have to own it. You have to make it yours. You have to, you know, and I'll give an analogy for this. During the pandemic, I was doing some painting and I don't have, like canvas art painting. I have no training as an artist whatsoever. So what I was doing was I was finding paintings that I like and trying to copy them. And I had a certain degree of success doing this. And I would literally draw with pencil on my canvas what they had done and reverse engineer. You know, that's an age old practice of learning. And I would do pretty well. And then I would look at the original and I'd get mad and I'd be like, there's just something about it that I can't get, that I can't capture, that I can't do. And I would realize, so the particular one I'm speaking about is I was trying to paint the sky with clouds and clouds are really hard. And I just couldn't get it. And I realized I had to just let go of their clouds and make my own clouds and own it and have it be mine. And, you know, I started in the box and then I had to put the box aside. And that move is what people don't do. Mm. They don't make that move. And so then they stay in that place of what's the rule? What's the pattern? What do I do?
Yeah. Okay. If you're going to stay in that place, don't even read this book. Like, because it's just going to be dangerous for you. Because it is not a recipe. They say it. And their algorithm can't write a bestseller. And it can't tell you how to write a bestseller. What it can do is look at what you have done, which it had better be, you know, it had better be your very, very, very best thing. And say, you know, what kind of verbs you have used and whether your structure goes. It's really fascinating to me what it can do and what the bestsellers have in common. But I mean, I find it fascinating in a, I do find it helpful as a writer, but mostly it's fascinating just as information. So yeah, if you are of the, like, if you get too caught up in reverse engineering, if you're like, well, I want to be, you know, I want to be Anne Lamott when I grow up, so I better become a single parent. Or, you know, if you get too caught up in that stuff, then yeah, okay, stay away from this. I can see the problems with it, but I think one thing I would say is that they own those problems. They say over and over again, this is not meant to help you write a bestseller. It won't help you write a bestseller. The way that you cannot say, vampires are bestsellers, so I'm going vampire. Like, they really own that. So,
well, and that's exactly the danger that I'm talking about. And what's interesting is I mentioned titles before, titles with nouns, and the title of this book, The Bestseller Code, is so good. It's such a good title for so many reasons, and people want to grab it.
It's the adjective noun. Yeah, that is. I've been trying to come up with a title lately, and I have been sitting around going, the adjective noun, the adjective noun,
yeah,
the adjective noun. I don't know that that's what my title will be, but that's what they would like it would be, because the adjective noun, even though my adjective is also a noun.
Yeah. So this is why talking to you about this particular issue is so hilarious, because
I loved this before I got lucky. Right? Just saying. And I did not believe this would get lucky. Like, this was a totally unexpected.
I spend a gift lot of time
from Reese Witherspoon that I must have earned by being very good in a previous life. That's all I get.
I spend a lot of time, well, previous to your success, I spend a lot of time telling people, you can't plan to have a bestseller. You can't control the outcome. It doesn't, just pretend like it's not going to happen. It doesn't happen. It's like winning the lottery. Just let that part go. You have to do the work. You have to, you know, put in the time and let the market decide what the market decides. And now what I say is, what happened to KJ is not going to happen to you.
What happened to KJ didn't happen to KJ in the first book, you know, or I've got another book, which is not up here. You know, yeah, yeah.
So it's very hilarious and awkward to be talking.
And it isn't going to happen with the next one. Like, it's not.
Probably not. I mean,
and that's okay. I won't feel that way when it doesn't happen, but I, you know.
But it is okay. That's what's so funny is for you in particular to say, you know, you could reverse engineer a New York Times bestseller and a Reese Witherspoon book club book. Like, that would be a great plot of a novel, actually. Somebody trying to do that, because it's not going to happen. It's just not.
That is totally the kind of book I would write. I am not saying you can reverse engineer the success. I guess what I'm saying is that it is useful to look at the things that go into it, because you can make the effort to do those things. You just can't expect them to work.
That's interesting. Well, and I do think, this book, The Bestseller Code, made me mad as a book coach. But as a human, I agree with you. I think it's fascinating. Why do certain books do so well? Why, you know, even just the general idea of books and the books we love and the ebbs and flows of what books become the ones everyone is talking about. And just that whole idea is just incredibly fascinating, and how messages spread, how ideas rise. I love all those books, like Made to Stick and Contagious. Mm-hmm. And I love all those books because it is really fascinating. And this book, The Bestseller Code, in my mind, if it were I mean, the one I said before, it's such a great title. But if it were skewed or positioned more like that, I probably would have been less upset with it. But it was like, oh no, now all the writers are going to say, okay, my title's going to be, you know, got the noun and my, I'm going to have contractions and that's going to make it a bestseller. And it's like, no, it's not.
Well, you know, something really interesting. So they fed all these books in and then they pick like 20 that they talk about a lot in here. And they are, I think it is The Bridges of Madison County and The Da Vinci Code and Girl Gone Girl and stuff like, and they spend a lot of time on those books. But when they also like sort of hoarded some bestsellers to feed their algorithm after they had perfected it. And so they fed them these later. And the one that it super, super predict, like the perfect book, the Uber book for the bestseller code, was, The Circle by, is that Dave Eggers? No.
Oh,
it's, yeah. Dave Eggers, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it was a bestseller, but it ain't no Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
It's no Bridges of Madison County. Not that I actually have never read that, so I don't have any feelings about it, but it's not Nicholas Sparks. You know, it is not that kind of, but it was a bestseller. So it's kind of interesting. It shows you the limitations of, and I, you know, I think this is a book that can help you write a book, good book, if you understand the limitations of it.
Yeah, so, that's true. And it's, you know,
we should talk about Seth's book.
Oh, let's talk about Seth. Let's not leave Seth out.
Well, that is a good book. Like, why did you put that one in opposition to this one?
So I put it in opposition to that one just based on that literal, visceral reaction to the title, the bestseller code, the idea that there could be a code or a pattern or a way to reverse engineer a bestseller, which is not technically what that book is about. But the opposition to that is the idea that you just have to do the work and you have to put your butt in the chair, as the hashtag #AmWritingPodcast will remind you every time. And the idea, so the, on page 15, this is my dog-eared page, Seth writes, "For the important work, the instructions are always insufficient. For the work we'd like to do, the reward comes from the fact that there is no guarantee, that the path isn't well lit, that we cannot possibly be sure it's going to work. It's about throwing, not catching, starting, not finishing, improving, not being perfect. No one learns to ride a bike from a manual." I mean, it's just like, boom. And
yeah.
And then the book reinforces that. Actually, I think there were some flaws in this book. I think it's thinner in depth than some of his others. But the idea that it's a practice, showing up to write and learning to write well, and your second book is going to be better than your first, and your third is going to be better than your, just because you got better at it and you've practiced it and you've committed to it and you've done it. And so
he doesn't want you to hold on to it and not ship it till it's perfect. That's also part of his message. He's like, you know, you got to put it out there and get the feedback and then redo it and then put it out there and get the feedback and then redo it.
Yes.
So that's important too.
Super important. And that is, I mean, that's the subtitle, shipping. Yeah. It's like doing the work, getting it done, learning from your failures, going on. And so it's very action and experience centered as opposed to external pattern or code centered. And I think combining that idea with the other of just, you know, practice. That's it. It's a practice. And sometimes it doesn't go well. And that's part of being a writer too, and part of being a publishing writer too. And I just am a huge fan of Seth Godin for writers, because we have to be market focused. And what you said before, which the bestseller code does not say, is you can't say, oh, vampires are hot, that's the market, I'm going to write a vampire book and I'm going to hit it. It, you know, it's so unpredictable, out of our control. We just do not know what the world is going to be when your book comes out, or what other forces are going to happen. And luck and timing play such a role in success. But yeah, the idea of just doing the work, I think this book really speaks to that. And doing the work in a market focused way is really an important point for writers, which is, So it's not predicting the market. It's just understanding the market, understanding how it works and understanding how books are bought and sold and understanding, you know, that there's things you can know about that.
Yeah. So I agree with all that. Like, I love that book too. It's not, I just happen to love mine. So I didn't tell you what page was dog-eared in this, but page that's dog-eared in this for me is uber practical. And it isn't so much that I have dog-eared as it is that I literally copied it onto a post-it note, which I carry around with me, which gets messed up and I have to recopy this. It is a list of verbs that are used in bestsellers and verbs that are used in not bestsellers. It is just another way to just the verbs.
Wow.
So bestseller, protagonist in best-selling books, run, jump, scream, cry, want, need. They do not whine. They do not sit. They do not, and then there's a lot of passive verbs on the do not. And that, it's not like I go through and change verbs to match those. It is more a reminder of what readers are looking for when they want, you know, in the movement of a plot and a book. And I adore the granularity of a list of 40 verbs that I have on it. I have it on a literal dog-eared post-it.
When you say you carry it around with you, you mean like in your wallet?
It's stuck in, it is right now, it is gone. It has disappeared, but it was stuck in on the notebook that I was using to write my, it was stuck on the notebook that I was using to write the, like, to keep notes on the draft. I didn't write the draft of the current book in a notebook, but I would sort of, when I got stuck, I go and scribble things like, well, what if this, and what if that, and what if that? And it was stuck to that. And what would happen is it would come off that and it would sort of be in the bottom of a bag and then I would find it. It's just around. It's like in the ether where I find it periodically. And I've had to copy it out once more. And now that I've talked about it, I probably need to copy it out again.
I love it. Well, I don't know who wins this round. I was trying to bring in the big gun of Seth Godin to beat the bestseller code. I don't know if I did, but
well, yeah.
It was a good effort.
The bestseller code isn't going to teach you to write a bestseller, but it might help you make your writing better, and it might entertain you.
I love it. Well, the five things that I am going to highlight about Seth Godin's The Practice are super short entries. We always need that. very market focused. I think it's important for writers to think about the market. And again, not to write to the market, but just to know the market is out there and to think about it. And he is really market focused. I like the fact that this book is not just about writing. It's about all creators. And I think it really helps writers to think about what's Bruce Springsteen doing in this regard? What is, you know, famous photographer doing? What's an architect doing? What's an entrepreneur doing? Think only living in the echo chamber of writers is a little limiting. So I do like that this is all creators. And then there's just the ineffable Seth-ness of this book that one has to put as the reason. So
he is good. It is true. So my five things about The Bestseller Code are that it is so friggin' nerdy. That's number one. Just the sheer idea of an algorithm doing this, I find enormously entertaining, and I am not for 1 minute fooled that algorithms will someday write bestsellers, but I like the nerdiness of it. I like that it isn't focused on literary fiction or on genre fiction. So many of the writing books that we talk about or love are they're one or the other. Like, the examples are Hemingway, or the examples are you need to write a book a month and see how fast you can do it. It's focused on books that don't always get a lot of love in writing books, but they are books that readers love. I like the gritty approach to style. I just talked about the list of verbs. I love the list of verbs. That is helpful. Everybody needs a list of verbs. I like that the bestseller code really focuses. It is actually not a book focused on writing. Although it talks about writing, it is a book focused on what readers want. And that, not very many of our books are focused on that. These are the things that are important to readers. They talk about themes readers love, and they're not talking about love conquers all. They're talking about families sitting at dinner. It's one of the most interesting things in this book is their firm conviction that 50 Shades of Grey is not about sex.
What? I didn't get that far.
It's not about sex. It's about relationships. And when their computer reads it, sure, sex is a topic in much the way that, like, lawyering is a topic in John Grisham's books. It's kind of, it's hysterical. But the real topic is the thing that kept people going was the relationship between those characters, which I wouldn't have guessed that. I thought that was really riveting, frankly. So the last thing I like about it is pretty much that. It encourages to take a closer look from a writerly, readerly perspective at books that don't usually get that closer look. I love that.
You make me want to go back and read all the books, KJ. The way you talk about them.
I'm a good bookseller.
It's a bit of a problem. Well, next episode, we are going to talk about books that help when you are stuck.
Yes, we are. And that is going to be great. So if you want to talk back to us about this episode, head over to the hashtag AmWriting Facebook group, best place to do it. Or you can tag me or Jenny on Instagram. I am at KJDA. She is at Jenny Nash. Am I right?
Jenny Nash Book Coach on Instagram.
At Jenny Nash Book Coach. You can put something in the YouTube comments should you be joining us there, and we would be always happy to hear from you. If you're on the hashtag AmWriting mailing list and therefore getting the show notes for this episode in your email, you can reply to that, and that will also come to us. Always happy to talk more about books. All right, that is it for this episode. Until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.